Welcome to the Citizen Experience Podcast, where we speak with government and business leaders who are bringing positive change and social outcomes for communities across the country. I am your host, Keith Scott. Welcome to the conversation.
Today's guest, I'm very glad to have a former colleague of mine with a major consulting firm. And, you know, this gentleman, have always been impressed by him. His name is Chris Steadley. He is a thought leader, strategic advisor to CEOs, and now has taken the realm on starting his own organization. But Chris has worked for prestigious management consulting agencies such as Gartner, Deloitte, PwC. So this, he brings it to the table. So without further ado, I really want to welcome my guest, Chris Steadley. Chris, welcome to the podcast. Good to see you.
Man, it's good to see you as well. And I'll tell you, hearing you introduce me, hearing other people sort of introduce me, saying all of those great things, I don't know if that'll ever be a comfortable space for me, but it's just good to be here, and I'm looking forward to today's discussion.
Well, you know, it's better that other people brag on you, not you brag on yourself, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, your resume is impeccable. You know, when we first met, I was very impressed by you, kind of, you know, like in that cartoon where the little dog chases the big dog, just wants to be in a space. You know, I definitely appreciate even the advice that you've given me over the years, but, you know, glad to get going. So,
yeah. Hey, you know, and I know we got to jump in, but it's really important, that, you know, we just kind of be examples, right? So that was always a thing. For me, it's to just be an example and help whoever I can, anybody, to be better. So let's do this, man.
All right. All right. Yeah. So, Chris, you started Steadley Advisory LLC, which is your organization. You came from, you know, a very prominent career as a management consultant. So what's led you on that journey to start Steadley Advisory LLC?
You know, I'll just say this, but before shifting from consulting into a career in diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, I was really wanted to make sure that we focused on, you know, are we going to be serious about doing the things? And we were. So, right, I'm happy to report that. And the real thing that kind of drove me was, and I'll give you a story. One of my former leaders, when we started getting in really deep into the diversity, equity, inclusion work, he said, "Chris, it sounds like you found your voice." Well, you know, the interesting thing about hearing this was that I had been really successful up until that point. So to the point where you have thought, "Oh, well, you know, this person has clearly already found their voice." But to hear it in that moment that, okay, now this is when I found my voice, like that was really powerful to me and something that just kind of stays with me like to this day. And so why am I out on my own right now and you know, doing things like a YouTube channel and consulting and speaking and getting on this is really to have more of a voice on this, right? And to have a broader impact on this. So that's something that's been really important to me. I'm always about helping as many people as I can, right? And so this gives me an opportunity to really do that.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. So you are in a very, I mean, you're a chief diversity officer, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in a position where you can really make impact with that organization and have that organization be a light.
Yeah.
So what are some success stories? Because you've been successful wherever you've gone. What are the success stories, and then what kind of did you leave on the bone that's, you know, still out there to be accomplished for them?
Ooh. All right. Well, look, I'm not going to be shy about this. I'm a data and systems. Yeah. I'm a real problem solver, right? And I'm not going to shy away from that. And I'll get into the real touchy feely stuff as well. I'm certainly capable of doing that, and that's not foreign to me.
Right.
But, you know, when I moved into this role, you know, there was a mission, right, around how do we embed the principles of equity and inclusion, right, and diversity into the fabric of everything an organization does. And I go to the word how, right, in terms of how we go about doing that? And so how are we hiring talent? Not who are we hiring, how are we hiring talent?
Process.
Right, right, exactly. And how are we engaging talent, right? Mm-hmm. How are we advancing that talent? How are we making decisions around products and services, right? And how are we going to make decisions around who we do business with in terms of our suppliers or partners or things of that nature? So wanted to really get into the how piece of it. And so you asked about accomplishments. Well, you know, we can spend a lot of time here, Keith, right? But we don't have that much time. And it's really a matter of, look, we built a real global capability and team, really proud of that. We established great relationships with partners across the globe, from HR, business leaders, operations leaders, again, necessary to like really embed this into like how an organization does things. We talk a lot about sponsorship programs. That's a popular term that we talk about, but we always thought about it in terms of, well, what is it that we're trying to achieve with this, right? And you talk about the outcomes of sponsorship. Well, that means that you built trust with somebody who's going to help sort of elevate you through an organization. So without calling it a sponsorship program, how do you make that outcome happen, right? And so there were a number of things in terms of, hey, how do we get people on high profile projects, right? So that they can demonstrate what they're capable of. And something that we say, well, like, we would help sort of like, how do we build trust, right, in people, right? And so that was one of the things that we really focused on. And then we think about like ERGs as well, right? And they're great for spaces to build community. But those leadership roles, right, of those ERGs, especially when you've got an executive sponsor on the senior leadership team, right. That is also another opportunity to work together and build trust, right? And to build sponsorship. So we always thought about sort of what is that outcome, because mobility was like really, really important. But the thing that I'm most proud of, and there's this, is around the transparency of data, right? And this went into this with this central hypothesis that, frankly, the more people that we can show the problem to, and I'm using the word show, not tell, but show the problem to in an organization of problem solvers, then the better off you're going to be, right? So this is just a matter of like really engaging people in the problem, and our ability to sort of take it from a really high level context to really sort of getting real granular on a business by business perspective and getting into some really difficult things to look at and making and increasing transparency around that is something that paid dividends for us and something I'm really, really proud of.
That's a good point, because things have shifted, right? I mean, to this question I ask, in 2020, diversity, equity, inclusion, with the death of the murder of George Floyd, really brought global attention. You started having local, state, federal organizations really start putting money behind. You even had an executive order in 2021 by President Joe Biden that was passed. You know, we've gone 2.5, maybe 2 years from the murder of George Floyd. Have we lost steam in that regard? Where are we today in relation to diversity, equity, inclusion, in your opinion?
Man. So you asked where are we at this, right? And so I want to think about that word we, right? And so I'm going to say that, like, thinking about we as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. Where are all of us on this? Keith, I think we're okay, man, right? And I know there's a lot of sort of doom and gloom out there around, you know, you hear layoffs and a lot of these roles are kind of part of the layoffs that are happening. And, you know, there's an article written every other week about sort of how progress is slow. But I'm encouraged by the dialogue and the maturity of the dialogue, right? And so just a couple examples, there was a piece, I think it was yesterday, from the Harvard Business Review, right? It was talking about discussing measuring outcomes, right? Right. And one of the, a representation, a lack of representation, I would tell you, is not a problem, right? It is a symptom, right, of the things that are going on. And so that article does a really good job of kind of talking about, well, here are the things that you really kind of look at that are going to drive change. So that's one. And then there was a New York Times article that I talked about recently that was questioning like the effectiveness of DEI training, right? And so the conversation is maturing. And so I think we're okay because of that. And again, that doesn't mean that people aren't going to be frustrated by this, but it's a never ending journey, right? And you're talking about 2.5 years. I mean, like, that's not enough time, right? Like, and we've been at this for, there are organizations who've been at this for decades, right? And, they do well with it. And it's just like who they are, right? And it takes time to really turn that ship. But I'll say that I think that we're in a better spot. I'm encouraged by it. I'm kind of optimistic about it. Based on the forums I'm in, based on the leaders I connect with, based on companies I speak with, I think we're kind of we're in a better spot, right? But this stuff doesn't happen overnight. But you do talk about, or you ask about, slowed, right? In some cases, and look, as with anything, there's places where things are moving faster, right? Mm-hmm. Things are progressing. And then there's other spaces where, look, there's opportunity for things to move faster, right? And sometimes, in my opinion, I don't know if that's necessarily wrong, because if you're disinvesting in this or you're moving back, then have we clearly articulated sort of the why, right? The why this is important, and we just got to be mindful of, like, in a for-profit context, right? The key incentive there is profit, right? And so, like, we just can't forget that, right? And so, how have we articulated the work that's needed to be more inclusive and more equitable, right? In terms of how it's going to help an organization become more profitable. And then you can think about this in the context of other spaces as well, right? If I'm, my mission is to address homelessness, right? Or, to really care for refugees, right? What is the impact that we're trying to make there? The best way to get the stuff to stick, right, is to make sure that you're really attaching it to what the outcome of the organization is. And so some momentum may have slowed, but maybe it's an opportunity, right, to really sort of reframe, like, the case and the why in terms of, justifying, making the change. So,
right. And I think that's where we are. I think that's, we're in the why phase of this, right? Yeah. So, George Floyd was more the what, and this is my opinion. So we at Kale Scott and Associates, we've got clients in different regional areas of the country. Mm-hmm. We can see these subcultures, right?
Yeah.
But all of the clients that we have at the local and state, because that's what where our focus is, and federal government, they've moved past diversity and inclusion. They're focused on equity, which is, basically saying, prove this to me that this is a problem, right? Mm. Prove it to me. So how do you prove it? You got to use data to prove it.
Yep.
And then you find out, okay, they don't have the data to kind of coalesce and tell the story, and quite often.
Yeah.
Have you seen that as a challenge, or what's your opinion on that?
So there's this broader dialogue, right, to be had about what's been going on, like, what are some of the barriers? And I was talking about sort of a case, right, to do this as one of the things. And also, fundamentally think that, and I'll just tell you, like, I was at a panel last week for the Illinois Diversity Council, and someone mentioned buzzwords, right? And there's all these buzzwords out there. And, I think that is something that really does plague the work, right? Like, we've worked with organizations on trying to drive change, and you got to simplify it for them, right? In order to do that, right? You got to understand, like, what it is that we're doing. And so you diversity, equity, inclusion, equality, accessibility, belonging, like all these things, right? And I just wonder, like, how can we like really simplify this? So I think equity is maybe one of these areas, right, where we kind of really get caught up in it. And it's like, oh my gosh, well, what's the difference between equity and equality, right? And, you know, and then people are throwing justice into this as well. And this is not a criticism, right? This is just a matter of like, how do we talk about this in a way that makes it accessible to everybody so that we can actually drive change? And so this notion of equity and if is really about, am I including, right, all of the perspectives, right, that are affected sort of by whatever we're doing, whatever decision that we're making, am I including them in how I'm designing the way I'm doing things, right? Like that is equitable sort of design, and that's going right. to be the things that drives equitable outcomes. And so, you know, your question about is this fundamentally sort of understood and people are driving towards it? I think we really got to make sure that we are simplifying this message. But it's good that we are here because it means that we have moved past what someone characterized a couple of days ago in a conversation, the elementary aspects of this, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're sort of getting into more of the master's level or PhD level aspects of this.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you were saying simplify it, because we have a client out west, and I'll just state out west, that confused this with critical race theory. Right. And this is when critical race theory was really just coming to be a buzzword politically. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking I had to actually go back and read what the heck critical race theory was. Right. Still confused on it. But right. I can see how this initiative or program has now become a political hot button.
Yep.
So how do you get directly to someone so that it penetrates their thoughts versus, you know, making it more of an accusatory, contentious type of conversation?
You know, it's just funny because I've, you know, seen this before and I've had the pleasure of being a part or a party to these conversations. And, you know, it always helps to expand the dialogue, right? So critical race theory. All right, fine. And then let's expand this to let's make it about gender, right? Let's talk about LGBTQ, which is another political hot button. Let's talk about different abilities, right? Which let's talk about different generations, right? And let's talk about people sort of in the military and their caregivers, right? Like all of these different dimensions, right, of identity. So let's expand the conversation, right? When you do that, right, well, you know, where you're not leaving really much space for talking about critical race theory, right? Mm-hmm. And because, you know, we're talking about discrimination against across a number of different lines and dimensions of identity, right? So that sort of helps kind of dispel that. And when you start throwing all that stuff out there, right, at some point, you're going to connect with that person on a real level, right? Like somebody in their family or one of their friends, right, or someone identifies in that way. And they're going to be, oh my gosh, well, okay, how can I begin to like open myself and open myself to the education and think about doing things differently so that the person who I identify with, who I connect with, who is being discriminated against because of how they identify, like we can help make the world better, you know, like for them, right? So I see that about expanding the conversation. And, you know, like there are going to be some people who are kind of critical, right, of that point of view. But what are we trying to achieve here, right? And so is it about creating a space where people are getting defensive and, you know, feeling attacked and blamed, right? Or, right, do we want to create what I say is like advocacy, right, and unity, right? And we want to sort of continue sort of to build this momentum. I'm trying to do the latter part here, right? And so if that means that we need to expand the conversation beyond race, in order to like really get people on board, then let's do that, right? Because the objective is to continue sort of to build this in a way and keep everybody sort of on board so that we can actually make progress. So expand the conversation then that stuff is like really important for establishing context, right? That comes with these different dimensions of identity. But also what I've seen to be pretty effective is you want to be solution oriented, right? So, okay, we understand kind of what happened here, right? Here's the context. Here's why, you know, people sort of think this way and, you know, they're insecure. And I'll talk about that in a minute about why, you know, we need to address this. But focusing more so on, hey, here are some solutions on how I can sort of help you sort of be better at this, how I can help you expand your tool belt. Those are the conversations that you're creating good vibes, right, for everybody. And you're moving the dial forward when you do that.
Right. So I've been in conversations with recently within, and I think we've had, I've made the statement to you in our private conversations. Mm-hmm. I've had a conversation with a mayor about 2, maybe 3 months ago. And in his conversation with me, or his concern that he wanted our firm to address, mm-hmm. is the brain drain or the mass exodus of talent from his community because of discrimination, because there's no upward ladders for their citizens. So that mayor understood the economic impact of this. What are your thoughts around that? How would you, give me your thoughts around, you know, how do you address that when you're looking at, you know, diversity equaling more productivity?
Well, it's is in any other change endeavor, Keith, right? It's and you've seen these. The most effective ones have a very clear message about why are we doing this, right? And if it's just about kind of doing kind of the feel good stuff, that stuff doesn't really stick, because then something else with a more sort of meaty message, right, is going to come over and take priority over it. So kind of leading with this, hey, we have an opportunity to improve our society, to improve our local economy, right, and make it better for everybody. And one of the things that we need to do as part of that is to become more equitable, right? And so this is why, right, I need you to understand whatever concepts it is that we're trying to sort of have a discussion about, or these things I'm asking you to do, these new solutions or these new tools I'm giving you. This is why I'm giving this to you, so that we can like create a better economy, not only for everybody, but this is going to benefit you personally and your family as well. So really getting that message right. I agree 100%, and kudos to the mayor that you were speaking of. I hear about sort of really tying this to a mission critical sort of priority, right? That is something that everybody can absolutely resonate with. So I agree 100%. The more closely that you can tie this to whatever the outcome is of whatever organization you're in, then the better off you're going to be.
And it's there's case studies out there, right? I mean, you saw them relocate the All-Star game a few years ago from Atlanta Braves Stadium out to, I believe it was either Colorado or somewhere out west.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The small businesses in that area really suffered from that decision alone, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you have, you know, you can be branded as a non-friendly community to a specific demographic group, right?
Right. So yeah.
I look at, you know, places like Asheville, North Carolina, very LGBTQ friendly. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you have, you know, LGBTQ members really move there, invest there. You have companies looking for talent there and things like that. And they're building these sub communities within the large spectrum of the United States. And that's what we've found.
Yeah.
Are we on the right track with finding the data that proves that this work is valid?
We're on the right track to proving that this data is valid. So I think of this in the sense of you doing a almost like a marketing campaign, right? Mm-hmm. and you put together an ad that you're going to put out in the mail or send out an email. Mm-hmm. And then there's this case about, well, how much did that sort of provide in terms of like profit or revenue for me, right? And, you know, it's really, really difficult to do that. And, you know, so I think of this kind of like in the same way to like do the sort of this like almost like one for one kind of thing. Like, okay, because we're investing in becoming more inclusive and equitable and diverse, you know, it's going to yield approximately X value. I'll say that you can pretty much tell if you look at who in your organization is succeeding and who isn't, right? And, you know, if you look at like who's getting whatever your incentive is, right? How you're paying people, how you're, you know, giving people performance ratings or, you know, things of that nature, like who's getting that, right? And if you see a disparity there, and if you look at it from a from a gender or from a race or from an LGBTQ or whatever other dimension of identity, and you see that, oh, well, people who identify this way, right, aren't sort of getting incentivized, and it doesn't look like they're being as successful as those in the majority group. So what that tells you is that I've not created the conditions for everybody to be successful, okay? And so you can start doing some math here, right? About, well, if I just can get everybody up to like an average level of performance, we can put a dollar number on, we can put a dollar sign on that, right? And what is that, right? And that may yield, I don't know, another $1 billion, right, in growth, or that may move some percentage points in terms of the impact that you're able to have, or improve the services that you provide as a government. And hopefully you have measures in place to kind of know, like, how well am I doing in terms of providing my services? But so what I'm saying is that there is opportunity on the table by not doing this. And if you can do this in a way where you're creating the conditions for everybody to be successful, and that means that you may have to do things a little bit differently from how we educate people, how we hire people, how we put in different training and development programs and programs to like make sure that people get exposed to different opportunities. It challenges the how of how you do everything within an organization, but you do that, and then yeah, there is absolutely some gains to be had. But to say that, oh well, we grew 5% because we were more diverse, equitable, and inclusive, that's really tough. It's as tough as saying that we gained XYZ because we did a mail out ad. But it's something that is going to permeate and uplift the entire success of the organization.
So with removing subjectivity, right, where we're really trying to quantify things, you know, what have you seen as measurable data points that can really drive this from, you know, foundational beta to full blown activity that works.
I'm thinking, and here's a typical consultant answer for you, Keith. Is
you're talking to a consultant, so
right. So it depends, right? You know, and what context are we're dealing with? And I think of metrics in terms of like, well, what's the best metric? Is the one that's going to illuminate the real problem and inspire the action, right? So what is that, right? And if you think about a context where, hey, we pay for performance, we promote from within, something like that, then how you're distributing performance ratings is critical, because that's got implications on who's getting promoted and how much people are getting paid, right? And so, like, really focus in there. But I'll give you an example. And there was one time we were we're doing a recruiting. So we had a bunch of MBAs, right? They were in we're doing a recruiting, and this is like the final round of interviews. And there was a situation where there was someone who was being discussed, right, in terms of you know, the feed, the people who did the interviews, they were sharing the feedback from the interview. And I remember just kind of listening to this feedback, and I was like, this doesn't make any sense at all, right? I mean, it just didn't at all. And then, so, and the person who was running the session, who happens to be female, she was like, that doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. You know what? We are going to hire this person, right? Because, and so the point I'm trying to get through here is diversity in leadership ranks is really important. It's paramount, right? Because, you know, if they're empowered, they can be powerful bias interrupters, right? And then that is an example of where bias, it sounded like it was in play. You know, we couldn't, you know, there wasn't clarity in terms of, wait, what did this person do wrong? Or what could they have done better in that interview? It just wasn't clear, right? But what we did know is that the interviewers and the person who was being interviewed, they had very different identities, right? Yeah. And like, it sounded like that was coming into play. And so we interrupted that like in the moment. And so diversity in leadership ranks is paramount. Now, there are others that I get into, like in terms of the metrics that illuminate treatment, right? And so this kind of goes back to like what I was talking about in terms of the how, right? So not like who are you hiring, but what are the, are there similar rates of progression through the different stages in your hiring process, right? That's something that I really look at. That tells you a lot about who you are as an organization. Who's sticking around, right? Are people sticking around the same amount of time? Are people getting promoted at similar rates? Are people getting paid the same, you know, people getting paid similar for doing similar jobs? Are people we don't talk about this enough, are people utilizing benefits at similar rates? Right. You know, that gives you a sense of like, hey, I'm comfortable kind of taking my PTO, right? We know there are others who aren't going to be so comfortable doing that. And again, what's the thing that really drives the incentive within the organization? So that could be a performance rating, particularly those high ones. Like that's something that really gives you a sense of treatment. And then, you know, a couple of others that get really to direct revenue and cost impact. But, you know, how do your customers identify, right? Thinking about that, and are you doing more or business, right, with people that sort of bring those different dimensions of identity? And similarly, from a supplier standpoint, and I think about this in the same way that I think about candidates who you're going to hire, right? How do they identify? How are they progressing through different stages of whatever that is? Are they progressing at similar rates kind of based on their identities? And if they're not, right, well, one, are you okay with it, right? Usually when you ask that question, you're probably not okay with it, right? So, okay, well, let's kind of do something about this. So there's a plethora of things out there, but I'll go back to my original question, which is, you know, what is the metric that's really going to inspire the change within an organizational context and illuminates the problem? So just kind of getting like really caught up in like, we got, you know, 10 or, you know, percent of XYZ, like in the organization, like that's not going to cut it. That doesn't tell you, that doesn't illuminate whether your organization is inclusive or not. So we can't forget about that.
And that's a good point. You actually mentioned PTO, right?
Yeah.
So I can see that being a metric. If we try to drill down into PTO, who's taking it, who's not, you know, let's just do gender, right?
Yeah.
A woman may feel a certain way for taking more PTO, even if it's family related.
Yeah.
You know, let's just be honest. During COVID, women took a higher impact, were impacted higher than men because they're normally traditionally they're the caregivers of the family,
right,
of the children. So they've had a higher impact. So imagine the pressure if you're a woman trying to promote get promoted, you know, through the corporate ladder.
Yeah.
And you have to take PTO.
Yeah.
And you're losing that time. It may count against you, but you're going to have to make a choice, you know, family or career.
Yeah.
You know, you made a very good point in saying that PTO and if companies look at that as a metric to see if there's any type of gender bias.
Yeah.
You know, I can only imagine if that's also the case on other demographic data points too. But what are your thoughts?
Listen, there are people who, listen, I'll tell you this, right? I was a terrible, for 15 years, right? For 15 years, so the last 15 years, I was a terrible at taking, I was terrible at taking vacations, right? And it really wasn't until the past two, and like, I was really inspired to like, hey, you need to like really take vacation. Right? And I was like, around people who were doing that more, right? But when you're in the when you're in this consulting context, man, it's tough, right? To get away. But also, there was also this pressure, right, that I always felt as a Black man, right? Yeah. That you know, I gotta continue to perform like at a really high level. And I gotta be beating everybody else. I gotta like no questions asked, right? I gotta do that. And, you know, so that means that, hey, if I'm on vacation and, you know, some leader calls a meeting, right, or, you know, something, then, you know what, I'm going to be on that meeting, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not utilizing sort of my PTO, or I say benefits, right, overall. Mm-hmm. And PTO is just one of the benefits that an organization will provide. But that's a good one. So this plagues, like, everybody. And we talk a lot about like wellness, right? And we talk and all this stuff right now, and you can kind of see, well, who's taking care of themselves and who's mm-hmm. not, right? Mm-hmm. And you can look at the data, right? Organizations can see like who's taking advantage of stuff. Right. And you know, if you're really interested in creating an environment, right, where everyone is able to perform, again, you're creating the conditions where everyone is able to perform at their best, right? Then understand, why aren't women taking a PTO, or why do people who identify, you know, with a disability or white, why aren't they leveraging like something, right? That probably means you have that in place because people said that they needed that, right, in order to mm-hmm. be successful, right? But they're not leveraging it. So why not, right? Understand what the barrier is and see if you can remove it, if you care, right? But see if you can remove it. And that is that's what we're talking about when we're talking about creating conditions for everyone to be the best mm-hmm. that they can possibly be.
Yeah. It's one thing to identify it. Then what are you going to do once you identify it? Right.
Correct. Yes.
So Chris, I like, you know, we could talk about this all day. Right? I'd like to ask you this question, because, you know, I want to make sure that you get, you know, some of the things that you're doing, you're working on, in the future. What haven't I asked you that I should have?
You know, I think that, you know, we talk about what's really, you know, there's still, you opened up, one of the opening questions was about sort of momentum and things that we, you know, what's kind of getting in the way. And what I don't think that we talk enough about is the role that insecurity for mm-hmm. everybody plays in this, right? And one of the most powerful stories that I've heard, and this was from a cisgender white man talking mm-hmm. about like what his insecurities were in having dialogue with females, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and this person is in a leadership role, and so being alone with like females, there was concern, right, about that, and like potentially like a harassment case, and you know, just stuff like that, right? Particularly at the time, around the time of the Me Too movement. And so because this person had because this was happening, it was creating this insecurity within this person, and this negatively impacted the ability sort of for females to like get like one-on-one time like with this person, right? But also we need to be really mindful of that, and we need to be approaching discussions and just approaching this work period and understanding that hey, it ain't just about us, right, who are disadvantaged or kind of whatever you know, whatever characteristic you want to use there, but the those who are in the majority group, right? That they also have their own set of insecurities, and people will say, I don't want to like placate like, or, you know, cater to their feelings. Yeah. But, well, again, what are you trying to achieve here, right? Is it you trying to create a moment in time where people feel bad, right? And then they, you know, just kind of go about their separate ways? Or are you trying to create unity, right? Are you trying to create togetherness, right? And let's all move forward together and being receptive to like the changes and or doing things differently. Again, I'm interested in the latter, right, part. And so I think, you know, we need to be talking about that. And also think we need to be talking about insecurity from the standpoint of, all right, like people are, you know, investing more in diversity, equity, inclusion. And you know what that means? That means that here comes more opportunities for people who, you know, they may be a little concerned about like taking that on. Right. We know that we know how, you know, women sort of respond to taking on risk. Right. We've seen that similarly. If you, you know, if you identify as not white, right, I'm going to be little less likely to take on some risk there, right? This is all insecurity that's kind of bubbling up, right? And so not only as leaders, how we sort of approach these settings, these contexts where we're engaging people in discussions, but also the people who have historically been excluded, now you're trying to include them all of a sudden, right? And making sure that they understand, you know, kind of why you are, hey, I want to, you know, hire you, or why I want to move you into a senior, a leadership role, or something like that. There are insecurities everywhere. All of us got it, right? We can't get away from it. So we need to really sort of just be thinking about that in terms of like how we design, how we speak to people, how we do things. So I don't know if that conversation is being had enough, but that's something that I think fundamentally is getting in the way, and we need to think about how we address that. So that's one of the things that I like to talk about a lot.
Like I said, Chris, man, I could talk to you about this all day, but I want to see what's next on the horizon for you.
Yeah,
how can people get in contact with you?
Oh, well, you know, what's next is stay tuned, right? There's never a shortage of conversations to be had. But for now, you know, I enjoy the speaking side of it. And you can check out my YouTube channel. It's called Win With Inclusion. Also doing some consulting things. So you can look me up on chrisdedley.com, or I'm on Twitter at chrisdedley. I'm also on LinkedIn as well. So I'm not, as Deion Sanders is saying, I'm not hard to find, right? But yeah, that's what's going on, and that's how you can reach me.
That's awesome. We'll have that in show notes for everybody. And for our listeners, you know, thank you for joining the Citizen Experience Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Chris is an impeccable consultant. So if you want, you know, a great speaker, a great consultant, this is your guy. So definitely thank you for joining the Citizen Experience Podcast, and we will be seeing you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Citizen Experience Podcast with your host, Keith Scott. If you're interested in creating a strategic plan that builds a diverse, equitable, and inclusive workforce, please contact us at DEI@klscottassociates.com, or you can call at 404-692-5552. Thank you for joining the conversation.